into it by somebody, or it was your idea that you raised the...
We were brought into it. Gabriel and I made a documentary for British Television about James Hunt and Barry Sheen. And the guy who was exec producer of that, at the end of that process, said to me, I've got what I think is an even better idea for a film, a TV documentary, McQueen and Le Mans. And he sent me over a treatment he'd done, and I read it and was like, oh my God, surely someone's made this before, and they hadn't to this extent. And
what do you mean a treatment?
A page, what he thought the documentary could be.
Did he articulate the Icarus ascending theme?
No.
No. That's something that came to you while you were making it.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you start out making it, you think it's going to be something, but I don't know. But I think the documentaries we've made, it's you find what that story is as you're making it. I think you know that it's got enough layers to tell a good story, but you want to go and try and find new things. And when you speak to contributors and they give you things like he wasn't Hercules, he was Icarus, then.
Right.
Then that's what it becomes. Yeah.
It's very. I found it very touching because he jumped off this. Called it a metaphor of jumping off a cliff, but he basically wanted to make a movie that was groundbreaking, in the sense that it was more realistic and really made you smell the fumes of engines. And,
yeah.
You know, grease on your hands and all the rest of it, without the and. What he saw as the entrapments of a romantic plot or whatever, which he felt would lessen the authority. But the argument would be, and I'm sure that John Sturges mentioned this argument, but Steve, he's a human being. He's, you know, it's not fake or phony for him to develop some attachment to a woman, let's say, or some involvement other than just the mechanics of races and, you know. So, right? That's more or less what the argument
was. I think he was. But I think McQueen was so in love with racing that he thought that was enough.
I love that John Sturges quote, I'm too old and too rich for this shit.
Yeah. Goodbye.
After how long was it?
Well, I think Sturges left after about 6 weeks of filming to 2 months.
2 months of filming.
And
obviously, they kept a lot of that.
So when we found the rushes, and it came in no particular order, and a lot of it was acting scenes, you know, Steve in a canteen, Steve in a trailer, but then a lot of it was the racing footage, and the slate was John Sturges at that point in time.
That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, normal espresso cappuccino.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you. So, is it H. Lee Costin?
Lee H. Costin.
He presumably endeavored to shoot it so that it blended, or same kind of framing, it's a very seamless film.
Well, still a lot of the racing footage was shot when Lee was in charge. I mean, I think he did. You know, considering what he was asked to do, he did his job, and he did his job well. He got it made. If he hadn't come in and did what he did, I'd still be filming it now, probably.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I mean, there was literally no intent from McQueen to do anything other than shoot racing. I really don't think.
So there was a kind of myopia on his part, obviously.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, I hadn't thought about it at the time, but someone suggested this to me that obviously his plan was to race in Le Mans in 1970, and he wasn't allowed to do that. And had he raced in Le Mans in 1970 and got the camera car material, plus Steve McQueen driving in Le Mans, then that would have been the documentary. You'd imagine the studio might have gone for that. And when McQueen wasn't allowed to race in Le Mans, then they were playing catch up. No matter what, he couldn't work out what to do. Maybe, I don't know.
I mean, are you saying that if he had been allowed to race, that he would have been satisfied as far as the authenticity aspect?
I think that the material, I mean, they got fabulous material in Le Mans in 1970, the camera car, but if that had been the camera car with McQueen racing as a racer, then that would have been a documentary, and that maybe would have been enough. Maybe. And when he wasn't allowed to race, then it became this, okay, we go and we shoot, and they were trying to work out what to do at that point in time. Mm. And weeks went by while they were trying to work out what to do. Mm. Maybe had he been allowed to race in 1970, that would have been enough. I don't know.
Initially, this was just going to be the we've already discussed, the extra footage, the unseen footage, was more than enough to make a fascinating, simple making of. And the arc of it, again, occurred to you, you realized that there was an arc or a theme to it.
Yeah.
About halfway through shooting or somewhere in the midst.
In terms of what we were doing?
Yeah, no, in terms of what you thought was you could really achieve here.
No, well, I think we got into it because of what we'd read about what was going on in McQueen's life at this time, you know, with his marriage, with the hubris, with everything that was going wrong at the time. It was on a human level.
Yeah.
We wanted to tell the story of this superstar,
right.
And in terms of finding the footage, we set out and found a couple of documentaries, a John Clowitter documentary in LA, a longer version that he had forgotten he had, a documentary in Paris. And at that point in time, with what we'd read about what was going on, we thought we've got enough to make a film here, and so we wanted to tell a story about him, and then halfway through the process we found the rushes, but we were still making it without that.
Oh, okay.
I look back now and think how the hell we would have made it without that, but we at the time we thought we had enough, and then we found this material and it was just, you know, wow.
And once again, it was sitting precisely where
it was sitting, and I can't tell you exactly where, but it was in LA,
yeah.
under a soundstage, and getting dusty and cobwebs all over it, and 400 to 600 boxes with Le Mans on the side.
Wow. And 35, right?
35. Yeah, and negative. So then obviously we got this email, and then it was like, this has to be it, but we didn't know. Then we had to get it transferred, and then when the first batch came over, it was a quick time, and it was half an hour's worth of material, and there was no rhyme or reason to it. It wasn't in order. It was just this hodgepodge of material. There was a bit of Steve acting, there was a bit of 1970 camera car, there was a Jonathan Williams driving, there was Louise Edlund in the pits. There was almost like, it was almost like Siggy Rauch driving. It was almost like everything you needed, or we needed, was in that first half hour. And it was like, oh my God, let's do that again. And so we did it again and again and again.
Yeah. When's the thing in North Hollywood? Is that Tuesday night?
Last night we had our premiere.
All right.
That's why I'm drinking water, Jeffrey.
Good night last night.
Yeah. I've got a headache.
You're not the only
Johnny.
One.
Johnny. Everybody, what a good night last night.
Oh, go ahead.
Are you hungover?
Oh, yeah, I'm very hungry.
Amazing. You saw that picture of me kissing my mom and my wife.
I didn't say to your wife. The daily fail.
The daily fail, exactly. No, you do. Sit.
We can scoot.
I'm going to sit there. Don't be shy.
What?
I'm at a disadvantage. I'm hungover. That was a great night last night.
So there was an after party afterwards.
I think I was here.
We had an after party.
I don't stay up that late.
Yeah, us too.
Yeah,
how you doing, man?
Go back to
sorry, I'm late.
I'm good. Yeah. Cool.
No worries.
They were saying last ball. I was like, what's
okay,
it?
You're okay.
I think that's one.
Oh, of course you think you're one.
As they say in England, I am hanging.
You're hanging.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
I'm sorry to have to meet you guys.
It was so nice on the big screen, wasn't it? I mean.
It was a great night.
So do you agree early on with this idea of the film having this kind of Icarus-like arc? Was that something that you embraced right away?
Say again, dude. Say again.
The movie has a theme or a metaphor of Icarus ascending, you know,
right.
flying higher and higher to try and get something exceptional, right?
Right.
That transcends or puts aside the conventional dramatic you know, love stories, whatever, that John Sturges presumably wanted to put into the film, and which ultimately...
You saw the movie, yeah?
Huh?
You saw the movie.
I saw the movie in Cannes. I was very, very high on it when I saw it.
Yeah, I'm very impressed. And finish with your question, I'm sorry.
The question was, did it have a personal resonance with you, the idea of your dad having kind of lost his mojo in the making of this film?
I don't think he lost it. I think he fucking...
It overwhelmed him.
Yeah, I mean, it was a hard time, you know? I mean, emotionally, but he stuck by his guns. You saw the movie. I mean, it's self-explanatory. It was a hard time on us, but for me, exhilarating. You know, being around all that shit was great, you know? And that was hidden from me, what went on with my parents. So, yeah.
I understand it's slightly shorter, the film. I didn't see the cut. I'm sorry, I'm so busy that I missed...
You missed a full cut, right?
I missed last night's screening. Is there a screener that I can...
Yes, I was going to do the screener.
So you hadn't seen the whole thing, huh?
No, I saw more than the whole thing.
So you saw the version in Cannes?
I saw the Cannes version.
But you haven't seen the recut.
That's so much... so much better. It's just...
Why do you think it's...
It's just streamlined. It's just cut better, you know? It's just tighter.
Tighter.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I will have to move you to this table because I have a reservation here. So if you don't mind.
No worries. Let's go.
Fine. Thank you so much.
Yeah, let us move.
Okay.
Johnny?
Just point me in a direction.
We're hanging, dude. Yeah,
sorry.
Oh, Jesus.
I need to hold your voices.
Here is this, Becca.
My voice is it? My voice is it? They need you.
I sound like Waylon Jennings. Guide me.
Come, sit.
Go.
Yeah.
You go, I'll sit.
All right, I'll slide in.
Jeremy, I'll see you, buddy. Go ahead.
So I'm going up the set.
All the way around.
I'm in. Next up, flowers again. Thank you so much. Ooh.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there anything that you would have passed along from a personal recollection standpoint that for reasons of, you know, time and just...
Ice water for you.
Thank you, Bill.
Is there anything that you would have put in, you would have said or shared that you did, that did not make the final cut? Something
no,
that you didn't
no,
feel?
No. Everything, I put everything out there that I remember. What's out there, they chose.
Mm-hmm.
In the other bishop. Thank you, pal.
Your batteries.
For my hearing aid?
Yeah.
Nothing was left out. I said everything I wanted to say. I mean, you know, it was pretty specific in the time and place, and you know.
Has either of you guys been back to Le Mans? Did you go there at all in the present tense sense? I didn't notice that there was new footage, was there?
So we went with Chad, yeah.
Went with Chad.
We went.
Well, I know that there was footage with Chad, but I'm saying as far as the atmospheric portraits of the town and the racetrack, is that... Sorry.
Yeah. So we went in summer of 2014 and shot around the racetrack. We used a little bit of the modern racing, but not a lot. There's a few scenes in there, but we went along. We shot at Le Mans. It's beautiful. It's atmospheric.
Yeah, we were at the classic Le Mans, which was nice because it was old cars from the era. Mm-hmm. You know.
Mm.
And by the way, Michael Kaiser is so excited. You talked to him.
Yeah, I spoke to him this morning. Yeah,
he was like he was here last
night.
Yeah,
I know.
But
who's Michael Kaiser?
He wrote French Kiss with Death, and he's a big Porsche historian.
He's a contributor in the film as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's one of our interviews, and so he helped get a 970 at the Premier last night. So it was ringing to see how it was.
For sale for $25 million. Okay. That's it, you know.
So after the...
Yeah, Mike had to hire those guards. Yeah, he paid for that.
I know, they kept telling us to get up on the curb.
I know, right?
After the initial theatrical, this will be on VOD and Blu-ray when, roughly?
First of December.
Okay, yeah. pretty quickly. Okay.
Yeah, in the States. And it's going theatrical in UK, France, Italy, Spain, Japan.
Ideally, what you'd want to see, if I were, and I am a big Blu-ray purchaser, I would want to see the doc and the film together as a package.
Well, that's, I think there's conversations.
Yes,
there's conversations.
That's right, I heard that.
Yeah, there's
I heard
conversation
that.
Happening.
I mean, that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. I mean,
I've got the Blu-ray, but I'd love to have you know,
the combo.
Yeah,
right?
Quite a few people have said when they see the documentary, it makes them want to go and watch them all.
Hey,
again.
Do you remember the film when you were a kid? When it came out?
I didn't watch it when I was a kid.
But do you remember it coming out or nothing?
It didn't make much of a ripple. It made, what made ripples were Bullet, Getaway, Junior Bonner, you know. It didn't make that much of a ripple, you know.
That's what makes this documentary so poignant, you know.
Because you get to see it again, yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, no, but the struggle and the, as I said in the film, every young racer from Formula Ford up to Formula 3000, they all have seen the film, you know? Even Le Mans winners like Alan McNish, you know, they love the film.
Mm-hmm.
That's who my dad was after, not the people that... he wasn't concerned about making a ripple, you know what I'm saying? So, what do you think, Johnny?
Well, I think it's everyone we spoke to who's into racing loves that film. They love it. Me, I watch the film and I see what is quite a confused film. I think the racing's amazing. The narrative is shoehorned in. I watched it twice during the production. I watched it at the start of the production. I found it a confused film. I watched it halfway through our production and I saw it with completely new eyes. I think you realise what's being achieved.
Why was Steve McQueen resentful of John Frankenheimer and Grand Prix? They just happened to get to it first, right? Why was he?
But he was attached to Grand Prix first.
He was going to be the star in it, and he dropped out himself, or why did he leave?
He had a falling out with the producer. Well, he can tell you.
Well, I think from what I heard, that he went to a meeting, whether it was with Frankenheimer or with the producer, I'm not sure. And they went there to a meeting, there to sit down. Mm-hmm. And when that meeting ended, there was no way Steve McQueen was going to be in Grand Prix.
Because the guy was totally not getting it.
Well, I don't think they were getting each other. I think it's fair.
In hindsight, it was a brilliant, you know.
And was he going to play James Garner? Or who was he going to be?
I think he was going to be.
Yeah,
James
he would have been
Garner.
That
yeah,
role. Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
You like a coffee on this?
That was the plan. But then that never happened. And then they were trying to make David champion. And both, it was a race. It was, you know, you have a long cut of the documentary, and it's right. in our longer cut initially. That was a chapter in our film. This race to the screen. And the studio, I can't, forgive me for not remembering which studio was behind Day of the Champion now, was backing it, and it was a race, and then they realised, because McQueen was still shooting, what was he shooting when he was waiting to do Day of the Champion?
What year?
66.
Sand Pebbles.
Yes, he was still shooting Sand Pebbles, so they couldn't start filming in time, and because of that, they were beaten, and the studio pulled it.
What year did Grand Prix come out?
By the way,
66.
A friend of mine.
Oh, that's right. It was earlier. That's right.
Yeah,
I forgot
yeah,
66, that.
66, 67.
Right.
A friend of mine went to one of Frank and I's last Q&As, I think at the AFI.
Yeah.
And he still regretted to his last day that my dad wasn't in that movie. So.
Bob Rosen tells a great story, which is
he was great. He was so good in the picture,
which is on the DVD extras. Never made the film, but he was working with Frankenheimer on a film in the later 70s, and they were on a flight flying back to LA, and there was a copy of a magazine on the plane, and they both had a copy, and they opened it, and the front page was top five motorsport movies ever.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at each other across the aisle, and they looked at each other, and they both flicked to it, and Grand Prix was number two and Le Mans was number one.
That's great.
So brilliant.
And apparently Frankenheimer never said a word for the rest of the flight, and whatever the magazine was, he got off the plane and cancelled his subscription. It's a great story.
I was actually rather affected by Yves Bonpland's story in that film.
So yeah,
he
so good
out in the like third act, right? Isn't that what happened? Yeah.
He crashed at Monza in that thing.
Yeah. Mm.
But you know, I remember in Solar Village, my dad would show Grand Prix at night after the rushes, the dailies.
Yeah, yeah.
And to show what not to do, we talked about in the film, because when they were driving Monza, they were going the wrong way, and my dad thought all that fake bouncing around in the cockpit,
yeah,
it's fucking bullshit. I said that, but it was cut. But that film had highlights, and you know.
I think maybe it was a good thing that it went first, because it allowed them to
do
that.
You're right. Yeah, gave them a template of what not to do.
Oh, there it is.
And what, who's that?
That's the guy that we were afraid of. Now we're going to hear him on the tape.
He's back.
Hopefully he's good.
What a great old picture with the Apollo horses.
So when was your dad's unfortunate fate sealed as far as the asbestos poisoning was concerned? When did that happen? What year? Where did he primarily get his system poisoned by asbestos? Where did that happen?
You know,
it had nothing to do with this film, right?
No.
Way back.
Yeah, I've heard two things. When my dad was a struggling actor in New York, he was working in the shipyards, and spraying asbestos in the ceilings.
Like 55, 54?
There was another actor, I want to say, I don't know, probably.
Yeah.
You'd have to ask my mom, but another, I want to say, James Franciosa, one of those contemporary actors, worked with alongside him and said, my dad never wore the mask. He was always shooting the shit.
Okay.
Without a mask. But, you know, who the fuck? He told me that he thought it might happen when he was in the Marines. The amphibian boat he was on caught fire. And for landings, they would run on a battery power. The batteries caught fire. And he said before he jumped off overboard, he took a deep breath, and he remembers the scalding going into his lungs. Who the fuck knows, dude?
Yeah.
But the date of his passing was November 7th, 1980. And it was 35 years ago last week.
Right.
Yeah, if you can believe that shit, man. And we're still talking about it.
I'm still, you know, you can
dude,
scream.
You got a good set of hair, by the way.
Okay.
Like Chris Walken, dude. Have you heard that? Have you heard Chris Walken before?
I've heard Chris Walken more than a little bit.
Sorry.
It happened.
Could be worse, right?
You know, you can. It's really great these days, because in the old days, if you wanted to see a film on your television, you had to find a VHS, you had to find a DVD. Now you can just like call it up in high definition immediately. You have the, you know, we all have this. I watched Tom Horn about 4 or 5 months ago.
I worked on that movie as a production assistant.
I was really glad that happened, because that was a really good film.
Thank you for that. My dad worked so hard on that. And the only thing you could see that he was starting to get sick. Could you tell or not? Could you tell that he was starting to get sick or not?
He looked a little drawn, but that was just age, right? He wasn't that young.
No, he was starting to get sick.
Late 40s?
49. It was second to last film.
Right.
Maybe 48 and a half, but
Man, he worked. After he worked. The Hunter, right?
No, before the Hunter was his last picture, okay. And I'll never forget seeing him. The fucking the truck, the dolly moving at 40 miles an hour. My dad on the Appaloosa with a octagon barrel 3130, with the reins in this hand and still fucking pointing and shooting at 40 miles an hour, and holding on with his knee. And you know what? That was the first time I ever saw him do what's called a flying W. You know what that is?
It was excellent, by the way.
Worth it? Ready for another one?
Thank you. I wouldn't mind.
Sure. Bring you one.
Thank you. So who attended last night? Anybody that any of your
dads, let me finish my thought here.
But what's a flying W?
A flying W is where they tie, and it's outlawed now. Used to do it throughout history, John Ford movies. They tie two tethers around the front legs of a horse, uh-huh, with about 100 yards of rope. Uh-huh. Shoe the horse with a rider on it. It runs out at 100 yards, pulls the horse's leg out from under him. The horse turns over like that, throws a rider. He lands on a mat or a dugout ditch, you know. Flying W. I was like, holy shit, man. I remember the thump the horse made. Boom. But the thing got up and ran away. Anyways, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Who is at the thing? Who of your father's friends from the old days have seen this film and spoken about it?
Last night, Mario, my dad's assistant from the time he was 21, was there. He was now a producer. My dad's chief mechanic through the Solar Days, Sebring, Oldfield, the 908 era, through Lamar was there. My mother, who was a hit last night.
There's a couple of others. You know, there's a couple of, like Sheldon, who was the assistant director on the Mom, was there last mm-hmm. night. John Clowiter, mm-hmm. behind the scenes.
I didn't even see them.
Yeah, they were.
I heard they stood up.
Peter Samuelson was there, who was a production assistant.
Mm-hmm. Being a pig with the
everyone who was in LA, sorry. who was in the documentary, was invited last night, and they all attended. It was great.
Cool. Is there. Is there anything that you wanted to put into it, that you wanted to include, that was extraneous but would have been interesting just to watch for his own sake, but didn't really feed into the narrative? Because I'm really a nut on this kind of stuff. I just love the minutiae.
I mean, yes, there was. I mean, the first cut, I mean, I don't know how other people make these things, but the first cut we did in the edit suite was—it
drove me nuts.
It was over 3 hours long. It's like, you know, it's like, oh my god! And then you start to argue, and then you start to debate about. I mean, there was stories and anecdotes in it that we thought it's got to be in the film. It's got to be in the film, but then it doesn't make it. You know, there's amazing stories about them trying to. The chateau that Chad stayed in, and then building a motocross track in the field next door, and about Derek Bell told an amazing story about him coming round the corner, racing speed, and there being a cameraman in the middle of the track, and
Hunter Whitehouse.
And they pull off and they go mad at John Sturges. John said, you can't do that. John Sturges radios Steven, who's over that side, saying there's a camera in the middle of the track. You can't do that. He said, it wasn't a camera. Who was it? It was him. It was Steve right in the middle of the track with a camera. And, you know, those stories that you get, and you think, when you get it and you put it in the edit, and you think that's going to make the film, that has to make the film. And then for many reasons and conversations, it doesn't, because you've sort of told that aspect of his personality in another way.
And by the way, he uncovered how many boxes of uncut footage?
Between 400 and 600.
Yeah. Of the million foot shot.
Yeah.
So we should go through that one day.
Yeah.
Make Lamont too.
How many have you not looked at?
I don't know what the I mean, the percentage we got through was, I don't know.
What you could in that time.
But we sort of made a decision. The last batch that I got, we were in the edit. We had a month still to finish the edit. I'd had 9 deliveries of footage, and the first one we got up to the fourth, we were using loads and loads. And by the time the last one came, I only used one shot. And then there was two things. One, it was time scale, and two, it was money. And it was like, if we're going to carry on doing this, we're going to have to shelve plans to try and get into Cannes, and I'm going to have to raise some more money. Or we think, listen, we use one shot, let's just make our documentary, and that's the decision we made.
And by the way, what was brilliant about their film, which I didn't know when we were shooting, but the shots you did of my dad going towards the cathedral and then me doing the same road, going down the same, through the same village where we shot the first day. That was brilliant, you know? And Dave Piper comes off so sweet. And my dad could come off as such a villain, this thing, for, you know, screwing around on my mother and doing, but you still feel for him, which is not easy to do.
Did he ever share with you any words of lament or regret about if he could do it over again, he would somehow play it differently, keep John Sturges somehow, or whatever?
No. I remember he told me one time, he said, I should have stuck with your mother.
Now, there's a poignancy to the film, which is what got me. It's like Sidney Pollack used to say that the best love stories are the ones that in which they don't work out. And you say, you know, it just doesn't happen. Concurrently, one of the more interesting types of films is when a project or a goal is sought after and it eludes. Like Zodiac, the ultimate cold case. It's fascinating, but they don't nail the guy. And Truth, the recent thing, which is, you know, about basically getting busted and getting shot down. And this is in the same kind of vein, which is what makes it touching. I think everybody's pretty much sounded this theme, right?
I agree. I think it's, I think there's... But it succeeded in many ways as well.
Thank God for visionaries like that, you know? I mean, maybe it's not mainstream, maybe not make a ripple, but thank God you got people that...
That go for
bring
it.
Bring the ass. Thank you.
Reach for it.
Right.
Someone said to me, again, comparison to another film. Someone referenced this and put it in relation to Gravity. To Gravity. And sort of said that, you know, Gravity 3 years ago is trying to, without much of a plot, without much of a script and dialogue, is trying to put the viewer in space. And it's Oscar winning and everyone loves it and everyone appreciates it in 2013, whatever it was. And back then, that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to, without much of a plot, without much of a script, they were trying to put people in the cockpit of a race car.
I thought that it was more interesting before it was Sandra Bullock got into it. That's my view. I mean, I know Alfonso Cuarón a little bit, and I know that he was thinking of something much more austere and much more immersive in terms of the experience. When she gets into it, it becomes a huge popular movie, but it becomes a Sandra Bullock movie. Yeah. Bennett Miller said it was like a Sandra Bullock in a haunted house, except space is the haunted house.
Right.
Yeah. So you guys are big fans of Gravity?
I really enjoyed Gravity. I really enjoyed it. I went and watched it. For me, I enjoyed the 3D experience of Gravity.
I didn't either. I gotta be quiet.
I enjoyed the 3D. It's a 3D experience. It's amazing.
I know what's gonna be really great is in terms of immersive. Just you're there, you're feeling it. Is the Revenant.
Right.
I'm pretty convinced just from the footage.
Yeah.
You seen the trailer for it, everybody?
Yeah.
Revenant.
Yeah.
With who?
Leonardo.
It's a survival movie.
That is very trippy, doesn't it?
It doesn't. Trippy. I'm not sure that it's got a great story, but it looks so real. Yeah. You know, Le Mans is very real in its sense.
That's it. Yeah, yeah.
Same idea.
Yeah. But I think that was. I don't know. It was pretty groundbreaking what they were trying to do. I mean, can you imagine what that film would have been if they hadn't put the the storyline in and what it could have been. I mean, the first 35 minutes of Le Mans is incredible. No script, no dialogue. Mm-hmm. So it's like a documentary. It plays like a documentary for 35 minutes. It makes you sit up and take notice, and then in comes the plot.
I think my dad just wanted to play with cars for a couple weeks.
I think there's that as well. Yeah, yeah.
Well, we'll just shit driving.
Someone said to me, and I think it's a good point, if Steve had been allowed to race in Le Mans in 1970, if the insurers hadn't stepped in, then that would have been the film. That would have been it.
Yeah.
You know, they'd have had the documentary of your dad racing in Le Mans, and then pretty much would have had it.
And the reason that they said he could not race was because he hadn't qualified enough with other...
No, it was insurance.
No, insurance.
Insurance.
For the movie. Insurance.
So he finished second in Sebring. He was good enough to race. He was going to race with Jackie Stewart. It was all set up to go.
Yeah.
And then, but the insurers of the film wouldn't allow it.
I do, but
that was the whole point of the whole thing. He wanted to make it real thoughtful.
Yeah.
I'm sure Sturgis was on his side, right?
But they wouldn't let him race.
Like
you can control the scene, can't you, afterwards, but during that race you can't control it. And people were dying. People were dying every race, every year, at that point in time. It's not like motorsport now. It's motorsport then. There was death every weekend. And you know, biggest star in the world, no chance.
Mm-hmm.
We'll give you $6 million to make a film, and there's a chance you might die. No.
Thank you so much for seeing so. Have a lovely afternoon.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've got to drag him off to another interview shortly. So sorry to give you that.
Before you guys leave, can I grab a shot of the two of you?
Yeah, sure. I'm sorry, I keep.
I'd like to get some light on the side of your face. It's one of the, you know.
Oh, I would love to go wherever you go outside, you like? Yeah,
yeah. Hang on. Hang on.